Thanks for joining us. I'm good to speak to Holly McCann. Holly's been an investor that's come to the Norse Group any number of times and been to lots of our events. Holly, welcome to this interview.
Well, thank you. It's an honor.
Well, it's actually really a pleasure to get to speak with you, watching what you guys do. And I guess that's really the intent of the interviews, is we're going to interview maybe about 15 people that have been successful and try to build kind of a roadmap for other people that are trying to do this business. You know, why is it working for you where maybe it's not for others? Holly, what was your background as far as what did you do before real estate investing?
Well, my background, even though I've always had an interest in flipping houses from my late teens, and I kind of heard about that, I took the path of going to college, getting an undergrad degree in accounting, and going to work for one of the big six back then CPA firms. Got a really great background learning about bookkeeping and taxes and accounting and auditing and all of that. Worked 5 years as a CPA and got an MBA in finance during that time before I quit, and had four children and stayed home with them mostly for quite some time. Then when the baby went off to kindergarten, I started getting involved in the real estate investing world with my husband, who was a civil engineer by training and background. But if we have time, I'd love to share his, he's really the one that launched us into this venture. If you'd like to hear that story, I don't know if
sure.
you've even heard it before. Okay. Well, it's pretty exciting and unusual. So he worked for home builders for years. And one morning he told me, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night last night and realized if I'd bought that piece of property out in Eastvale, which is in the Inland Empire, we could have made $10 million if we just got it and then flipped it. And I'm like, what? Okay, whatever, honey. He's like, I'm going to go and look for a piece of land. I'm like, okay, honey, yeah, you do that. And meanwhile, he's working for home builders. I'm staying home with the kids. Never a thought of, you know, getting out of corporate America and out of, you know, that lifestyle. Well, he did. He found a piece of land in the Inland Empire that had orange groves on it, 17 acres. Got it tied up with a 1% earnest money deposit from a home equity line of credit for $28,000 from our house in Yorba Linda. And the sellers, you know, had full faith and confidence in him. It was an older couple farming this orange grove. And it took him several years to get the permits and entitlements on it, which he did for his day job. And he never took anything away from the company time-wise, energy-wise, or money-wise, you know, to do this thing on the side. And I helped do that stuff on the side and on the weekends. And because of that, we rode up the wave. We sold it in 2006. And he never likes me to share exact dollars. But it was a large enough chunk of money that allowed him to quit his job with great comfort in 2006 and launch us into our real estate investing path. We then we took a chunk of that to Texas, where we lost a lot of it on a condo conversion project that was too big and too messy and complicated, and the financing for condos dried up. So we came back, and I took your boot camp, and we started flipping houses one at a time back in 2008.
It never occurred to me to think about this as a couple kind of came to the conclusion at the same time and did it together, because a lot of times that's, even though you're married, there's usually one interested party in real estate and one not so interested party in real estate. Going back further than you getting a college degree, when you were being raised, you said you were very interested in real estate when you were at like the end of your high school. Where did that come from?
I wish I could remember exactly, but I know when I graduated college, which was in 3 years, and it was just before I turned 21, I came back here to the Costa Mesa area and was looking at apartments to rent. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's like $1,200 a month. Why would I pay that if I could, you know, be owning a piece of real estate and building equity? So So even I did acquire my first condo that I lived in, not even a year out of college, and rented out two rooms. But I wish I could remember where the flipping idea, buying houses and fixing them and flipping. I mean, that was one of the first conversation topics that Scott and I had when I called him to ask him out. So we've had that from
I've noticed you're sort of shy.
Yeah. So Scott loves that about me. I'm a networker.
What about what did your parents do? Were they into real estate investing, first of all?
I'm sorry, did you say my parents?
Yeah. Did you see this?
No. They were entrepreneurial. My dad was an aerospace engineer, as was Scott's dad. My dad had dreams of owning a McDonald's or a mailbox, et cetera, and he looked into different entrepreneurial ventures, including owning a catering business that he and my mom did with partners for years. And then they told me once, you know, we only make about $2 an hour at the end of the day for all the time and energy we put into this. So if anything, it kind of discouraged me from, you know, thinking that way. You know, it was a mindset of go work for a big company and get a pension and get your health care. And we've totally revolted and done a 360. So
now, see, this is exactly what I want. I really think that most of the people that are successful in the business almost started that from scratch. In other words, that wasn't a model that they were shown. What were your parents' expectations of you? You were going to do what after high school?
Go to college. Education was very important. If I didn't bring home straight A's, the question was, what happened? Where'd this B come from? So, you know, okay. Education was very valuable, but not towards earning money. My mom has two master's degrees and my dad has one, but they weren't all about wealth building. It was kind of education for the sake of education, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so. No, it does. It does. Did you ever look at whatever they were doing and saying, I want something different than that?
It's kind of I knew they weren't super happy with their catering business that they ran on the side of my dad's job. But I thought, okay, I'm going to follow kind of my dad's path, not in the aerospace world, but in the accounting world, you know, go work for accounting firms and work for someone else. Working for myself sounded scary. I mean, one guy told me once in the middle of my accounting career when I figured out I could do stuff on the side and it was much better money than working for, you know, 15 to 20 bucks an hour for the accounting firm. He's like, Holly, you should hire a college student to do this bookkeeping work and then you oversee them and you make the difference. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really too scary. I mean, that just totally intimidated me back in my 20s. Now, of course, that's all I do. So,
I think that's the theme of what we're trying to look at and say, okay, we were all given a certain box that we observed and either said, okay, I like that, I'll replicate that, or some of it's okay, but I'm not happy with that. A lot of us do what we see, but then, like what you did, after a certain amount of time, you start looking around, and then Scott was kind of the same way. He said, okay, we can do this. And all of a sudden, you know, you start being real estate entrepreneurs, and in kind of in a different way. You really started with a major project.
Yes.
Because he had knowledge enough to pull that off.
Yes, exactly. So the house flipping idea was really on the back burner, and we were really discouraged because we had bought our first house together after we were married in Orange from some kind of a public county auction, and you know, it was really thrashed, animal feces in it, I mean, a major fixer-upper. And we thought, we're going to fix this and resell it in a couple of years. Well, the market was not doing well in the early 90s. And we ended up staying there 6 years and breaking even with a lot of our own labor. I mean, we laid the tile. We scraped the ceilings. I did a bunch of it while I was pregnant. And so we got down and dirty and did this whole rehab and basically made no money for doing it. So it was interesting. But it was good education. So.
No. What's interesting is when Scott tells you of this, I had a dream speech basically, and we can do this. You were your reaction was you wanted to land on that security space basically and say,
yeah, I didn't believe it. I had no belief because I didn't know anyone that had done it. And even when we made that first big chunk of money, we looked at each other and like, oh no, what do we do now? We didn't know anyone that had that much money of our friends and relatives. We didn't know who to ask to go, what do we do with this money? How do we reinvest it? How do we take care of this? And it was
What was your family's reaction to that? Were you even able to share that? Was that
we've
okay
never,
to share it?
Yeah, we've never told any of them exactly how much money it was. They had some idea that it was good since Scott quit his job. But,
right.
They just, they're like, oh, okay, good. And there's been times even that my mom has been concerned over the years, like, because it's a roller coaster of cash in and cash out and house rich and cash poor, and now we're cash rich and house poor, you know, it's up and down. And
sure.
And we've gone to them to borrow money at different times, like 50 to 100 grand here and there to get us through different spots. And she'll get all worried, like, Mom, we're fine, we're fine.
That's just the wrong three-month cycle.
Yeah.
Well, now you know why me as an investor ended up with a hard money loan business and a seminar business is exactly for that reason, is that I remember 1 month being at the end of what I thought was going to be 9 closings and only 1 closed. And you go,
oh,
got to
no.
be kidding me. I have all these hard money loan payments, and I don't think they care if anything closed. You still
yeah.
have to make them all, you know. Texas, now, you go from a whopping success, and you take the money out of state and do something, again, that's kind of within your knowledge as far as you're capable of doing the engineering and stuff of doing a swap, but I don't know, doing it in another state. You know, what were the things that kind of got in the way of that being a success, and how did you cope with, right after your first major success, giving some of your chips back?
Well, the reason we went there was we could see that California was going to be heading down, or was heading down. I think we closed on the purchase of that 30 units of apartments in June of 07. So things were already not great here. The opportunities we thought weren't so great here. And then when we got there, one of my biggest things I learned was the property manager that was on site lied to us. And I didn't realize she was lying to us because I am the person that trusts and believes people too much. Scott's always, you know, pulling the reins on me on that. But she would say she was trying to get our empty units rented. Well, I asked a couple of my contractors to send their girlfriends over and kind of mystery shop it, and this property manager wouldn't even show my empty unit. She was showing someone else's unit. So we had a lot of challenges. We were trying to sell condos that we were converting from apartments in a rental type neighborhood. People didn't want to own there. They'd go and check it out, say, oh, your models are beautiful, but the neighborhood isn't great because there's couches on the lawn across the street that people just throw out there and leave. So we learned a lot, lost a lot of money, what not to do, and we got tired of the traveling. And we have 4 kids at the time, were much younger, and we'd take turns traveling back there. Sometimes we'd bring one of them along so they could help us and learn with us and stuff from us. But it was a big mistake, and it was such a big project. We were actually in contract for another 60 units, but thankfully Scott had scheduled it in phases, thinking like a builder, and then we never closed on those. We just lost our $50,000 deposit on those.
And
so we came back, like I said, and, you know, like, let's see what Bruce Norris is doing. And I went to your boot camp and saw what you were doing in Moreno Valley and a little bus tour and said, we can do this. And started buying at trustee sale and had great success.
Now, so you started that in 08 and 09, something like that?
Yeah, 08. I want to say August of 08, so we're kind of coming up on our 6-year anniversary of when we bought our first house in Moreno Valley.
Did you buy and keep a lot of those, or did you buy and sell more?
No, we flipped. We flipped
okay.
almost everything. There was a few that we kept because Scott would go knock on the door and after we bought them, and the rent was so good. I mean, there's one we still own in the town of Mecca. Have you heard of Mecca?
I don't know
way
where it is,
out
but
there
I heard of
past
it.
Palm Springs. And we paid $29,000 for this house, and she's been paying us $950 a month rent for, I want to say, 4 years. So we've more than made our money back. So we had a couple little things that made sense to keep rather than flip, but for the most part, we flipped everything.
Has your project type changed as you have gone from 2008 to 2014? Are you now working on different sized or value projects?
Absolutely. Everything has changed in the beginning. At the beginning, probably the first 75 houses we bought, were a lot of them were in the Palm Springs area because we saw opportunity there. As auctions, people weren't so pouncing on those Palm Springs ones, but we were willing to drive an hour to go out there to do the work. And we were in a lower price point. We bought things, the cheapest thing we bought was $13,000 mobile home in Blythe. And probably the pricier things we bought were like $200,000. Now we pretty much look for things in the $400,000 to $800,000 for a purchase price. And we're more in Orange County and even LA as opposed to Inland Empire.
And are these homes that require some expansion of the structure?
We've only done one addition on the little house in Orange. Other than that, they've just been often realigning walls, sometimes creating an extra bathroom inside, changing them to an open concept as they're older, getting rid of the wall between the family room and the kitchen, that kind of thing. So not too much addition, but we're definitely looking at those and expanding into that. As long as the numbers make sense.
So I gather you've gone away from trustee sales, and how are you buying most of your properties now?
That's where my lack of shyness comes into play. So the last couple of years, we bought everything through realtors. I love to go out and network and meet people, and we get all of our deals from me talking to people. So I tell realtors, hey, if you bring me a deal, a house, I will buy it with you and I will resell it with you. So they're guaranteed two commissions. Mm-hmm. And they love that. And two of my realtors, we've done that 8 times with. They scour the MLS or it's their own listing and they bring us those and it works really well. But yeah, we left the trustee sale a few years ago and get everything through networking, word of mouth, my big mouth.
So you're doing no mailers?
Nope, never done a mailer.
No signs?
Nope. I probably should. I think about it.
Well, I don't know that you should. In other words, I think this is important, too, because you have a niche that it works. But I guess that's the point of the conversation. Why would that work for you when it works for very few people? Why does it work for you?
I've always liked to talk to people, and I love telling people what I got in trouble for in school, talking too much to my neighbor, is now making me money. But I knew it would come and come be helpful at some point in time. But I think there is definitely a lot of skill in networking and communicating with people. I remember at one point a couple of years ago, I read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, one chapter a day, digested it, and tried to apply it that day because it's full of so much great information, you know, perhaps like using a person's name in conversation, which I'm still not great at, Bruce, but I'm working on it, Bruce. So I learned a tremendous amount about leadership and people and networking by trying out a couple of multi-level marketing businesses, because that's what they teach you in their training. And in fact, in one of those businesses, it was a skincare business, I met a woman who led me to a guy that I've probably got 20 houses through that networking connection. So I definitely made more money through my networking in the MLM company looking for real estate deals than I did in the MLM company. I mean, I made money. I was successful, unlike some people. But, you know, you never know where your deals are going to come from. So,
what is your most important practice?
Go ahead.
What would you say is your most important activity that you do every day?
Well, I exercise 6 days a week, which gets my energy up and my frame of mind in a positive way. And I network with people at the gym. I just can't help myself. And the other thing, I listen to personal development on audio CDs or on my phone every day. And I try and listen for skills and activities and things that I can apply in my life. I like to find action steps, things that can make me better and more effective and more powerful and a better manager of the people that work for me and a better networker with the realtors and connections to realtors. So those are two things I for sure do every day. And when I'm in deal finding mode or money finding mode, if I'm looking for money partners, then I'm out at the Chamber of Commerce and at networking opportunities, maybe the Board of Realtors, Women Council of Realtors. So it just depends on what I'm needing in that cycle of my business of where I'm networking to.
Holly, was being financially independent an important goal for you guys?
Yeah, I didn't think it was at the beginning, and I thought it was not possible until Scott, you know, showed me with that first deal that it was possible. And I still have goals to increase our wealth and help a lot of other people with that. And especially, I love the idea of teaching financial literacy to kids and teens, getting it to people when there's, you know, getting it in their mind and changing their mindset when they're young rather than waiting till they're, I mean, I was 36 by the time we got that first big payday, and it was kind of like a reality for me. I'm like, oh, this can happen. How great would it have been if someone pointed that out to me and showed me a path when I was 16, 20 years earlier. So.
Mm-hmm. There's a woman I just talked to, and she's in Northern California, and she takes time to speak in front of high school kids, and she did a talk about financial independence. And she said a 14-year-old walked up to her, and she said, I had no idea you could plan this stuff out. And that was... That's exciting to have an influence of somebody so early in life, because they may be looking at a life that they saying, I don't want to replicate that. I would like to have something different, but they just not, they don't know how they can do it. So that's,
right.
That's the start. Pursuing the financial side, have you been able to maintain balance that's been satisfactory to you?
What do you mean by balance?
Well, usually when people, if you're going after financial goals, a lot of times your whole life skews to that. So you have family, you have kids and all that. So have you been able to manage all of that inside of a schedule where you go, okay, I'm covering all the important bases, and, you know, we still have kids that will talk to us and all that. In other words, do you have a well-rounded life, or did it ever skew where it was mostly chasing financial and then kind of rebounded to normal?
Well, I would say that the last couple of years I've become somewhat of a workaholic, but it's because I love it. And my social life is with other real estate investors and at the real estate clubs. So I'm definitely skewed more towards my business building than I probably should be. But we are moving down to pretty close to the beach in a week or two. And when we get to that point, I think we're going to have a lot more opportunity. We're going to live right next to a park to get in the park with the kids and the dogs and take more breaks and definitely focus more on them. So. It's hard to pull myself away. I love what I do, and I love the networking thing, so it's hard to pull myself back.
Holly, what would be, this will be your last question. What would you, what advice would you give someone that's looking at this business for the first time?
That's a great question, and I do give advice to new people all the time at the real estate clubs. So I've heard it said, you hear these different seminar promoters and gurus saying, oh, you can do this business with none of your own money and it's very little time and anyone can do this. Well, I believe anyone can do this business, but it takes time and money. And if it's not your time, you've got to get someone else to partner with you and put the time in. If it's not your money, you've got to find a source for money. You know, it could be the Norse group, but I know even the Norse group requires you to have some money. You can't do this with $0 in your bank account. So you've got to commit time and money or find someone that has it. And then additionally, you've got to get great education, and it's definitely out there and available. I mean, I learned all the beginnings of my education from the Norse group boot camp. And I'm not getting paid to say that, but I mean, that was a really, really great beginning education. And then
what other educators have helped you in that?
I've never done any other big courses or, you know, expensive seminars in the real estate world. I've done personal development things like with Tony Robbins and Laura Langmire and some other big companies like that. But
okay.
I just go to the real estate clubs, and I learn a lot from the real estate clubs, the speakers there, and from networking with my peers and asking them questions. And asking, I mean, that's one of the biggest things I learned with networking is saying, oh, Bruce, what are you working on? What are you looking for? How can I help you? And you might say, oh, I'm looking for someone, I'm looking for more investors, or I'm looking for a contractor for this rehab I have out here. And then I try to provide value to that person. So I'm not just a taker. I look for how I can give, too. But, I mean, the other thing I advise new people, too, is to look for somebody with experience. And, you know, someone like me or maybe less experienced than me, but asking them if you can shadow them or can you work for them or do something for them to give value to them. And in return, hopefully that person would educate you and, you know, give you the tips and advice you need. So we've partnered with a couple of new investors who have contributed a deal or have contributed money. And then I'm happy to share my knowledge and educate them on what we're doing. So I would say get a mentor, find a mentor, but don't just expect someone to give you all the information and education for free. You need to offer something to them.
Well, Holly, thank you so much for taking time. I know you have one very busy day today with the with your family and a graduation and a potential move and everything, but what's nice about this, I have learned some things, and so that's important. I think what you shared is important to people because there's obviously a pursuit of a lot of things, a lot of skills outside of the real estate world that has made you successful. Your ability to talk to people, and that one book that you mentioned, what was it?
How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yeah, yes. That changed. That really changed my life because I, at the time I read that, I had been fired 5 times in a row. And there was a chapter in that book that was entitled Avoiding the Acute Angle. And I was a master at creating acute angles, actually, which means that if you could rub someone the wrong way, I managed to do it, or I made a big deal out of nothing. And I realized I'm going to make a game of diffusing people. And I got very good at that. And it was almost a game. Whenever there was that type of confrontation, I would always think of that chapter and make it a game to diffuse somebody. And it was such a cool tool. I just never forgot it. And I know why you like that book. It's not a manipulation. It's saying if you want to walk around the world and put a smile on your face every day, look for good things in other people, that you can actually say something to somebody and be sincere about it. And That made my day better. I'll tell you one quick story. I was at a 7-Eleven getting a Diet Coke, and a guy had a fantastic beard. And I just said, that's just the best beard I've ever seen. And I went back there probably a week later, and the line was 10 people long, and the guy was at there, you know, at the counter again, and he looked kind of woefully down the line of customers. When he got to me, all of a sudden his smile beamed off his face because of what I had said a week before. And it's kind of fun when you look for that type of stuff. And that book helped me figure that out.
Yeah, well, I have to say I've learned a lot from you every time I hear you speak, which has been many times. And you're definitely a great example of how to live your life and according to those principles from that book. You're fantastic at it. So.
Well, Holly, thanks so much. You have a great afternoon, okay?
Thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.